Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
And Rachel Howie.
Good evening. Good morning.
Now, we did some EGX stuff on Monday, and we thought we'd do the other half, because there's other massive games that you guys got to play and see. And so we're going to delve into it. Rach, you got to sit and watch a blooming gameplay thing for Cyberpunk 2077.
I did, yeah. Oh, that was really cool. One of the coolest, one of the highlights of the weekend for me, Ash and I, swaggering into the room, taking those reserved seats at the front row. Oh, it was very, very cool. Unfortunately, though, being in the front row means I watched the whole thing like this.
Just with your neck cranked.
With my neck cranked way back. But no. So, yeah, it was about 45 minutes. It was a lengthy, girthy gameplay demo. There was, I've forgotten her name, bless her, but she said she was one of the concept artists who worked on the game, walking us through what was happening on screen. And we had a lovely little professional gamer playing it on the Xbox down.
So you could kind of confirm it was like a running build.
It was. You could literally see, we had full view of the guy playing it and the screen that the guy playing it was looking at. It was definitely being played. There were a couple little tiny visual glitches that led me to believe, like, honestly, it wasn't just pre-recorded. It was, this guy was definitely playing it. They showed us like a really, really good sort of like splice of the game, I thought. It showed you everything from vocal interactions with people, just like randomly walking past someone and then like sort of hearing rumors on the grapevine and going over and going, hello, what's going over here? Like little bits that just make a world feel really lived in, inhabited. It was really cool.
Because we talked about Cyberpunk quite a bit, and obviously like one of the biggest things with it is that it's going to revolutionize open world first person stuff. Did you get a feel for like the scale of it, like in terms of the amount of detail that's in it?
I did, actually. I did, just from how, I guess, slow the gameplay was. Well, it was slow in parts, but for me, like, overall, I would call it slow. It's very meticulous. It's very, I get a sense that I'm going to want to explore everything. Right. I'm going to want to talk to everyone and really think about like the kind of dialogue options I'm doing and the approach I make to combat. Combat is not slow by any means.
I was going to say, tell us about the combat, because you've seen little bits of it.
So they started off, they really put an emphasis on showing us the stealth, first of all. There's always like more than one way you can tackle a situation. You can level up your character and go into like hacking, and you can like hack open doors and like, take over turrets and get the turrets to like turn against their masters, that kind of thing. Or you can go balls to the wall, guns blazing.
Can use your blade arms.
And it was
that's
mental.
What I want to do.
And it was really violent as well. And it was like, oh, this is delightful. it really put an emphasis on choice. That was what they really, I think, wanted to convey through the combat. They kept switching between two different character builds, one that was a melee character with a big old gun, and the other one, which was a hacker.
I've always think, because like, obviously, I don't know if you guys have you read the book, the Cyberpunk 2020 book? No. So I've got that back at home. That's just like a tabletop, you know, build your character, you design your own world and customize everything and whatever. But there's so much depth to that thing that, like, you know, no two players are ever going to have the same like experience whatsoever. And I think that's obviously what they're trying to do with this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know what when you came away from it, or like just when you were watching it unfold, like, does it feel like the next evolution of RPGs, or is it a perfected version of what we've already had?
Not necessarily. I didn't really see much that I was like, this is new and amazing and wonderful. It was just a really, really good, really solid sci-fi, massive RPG. And I don't think a game necessarily needs to revolutionize the genre to be incredible. I didn't really see anything new per se. We've seen hacking in the likes of Watch Dogs, and we've seen hand-to-hand combat in the likes of The Witcher, for example. But like, it's still good.
The question I had was, because it's like the game that I'm going to see this game and get a lot of comparisons to is probably like Deus Ex, because of the fact it's like augmenting your body. It's a sci-fi sort of Metropolis slash sort of like dystopian future.
It's first person,
and a lot of choice that comes into it as well.
Deus Ex is first person. Mm-hmm.
Are you thinking that this is like doing what that did better, or do you feel like, from just your impressions, is it completely different? Because that's because I have watched the presentation and I've played Deus Ex, so I can't really imagine what the bits you've seen as well.
I confess I haven't actually ever played Deus Ex. Mm-hmm. I've only ever sort of looked into it for work and sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So from what I can tell from that game is very linear, very like, now you will go to level 2 and fight the level 2 boss kind of thing. Whereas with Cyberpunk, anyone can be a boss. There was a big choice partway through the demo. We were doing some work for one gang, and then we were met with a choice where we met a guy who was like, that gang is going to betray you.
Right.
Come with me. Do my thing with me. We said no. Turns out the gang did betray us. And that sort of like, so if we, I get the feeling like, yes, fair enough. The gameplay is like, sorry, not the gameplay. The situation, the augmentation is reminiscent of Deus Ex. But I feel like this is much more personalized. You're not playing Adam Jensen.
Yeah.
You are playing as your character.
Right.
Did you get to see any sort of like customization menu
stuff? We did. The game started off with a bit of we were doing it was the customization was quite good, and it went all the way down to costume, and that was really cool. Little tweaks in the hair, the eyes, the face, that sort of stuff. They didn't dwell on it too long. I feel like I'll be spending a couple hours so it's the character looking in the mirror doing all the stuff. It zooms out. Johnny Silverhand, Keanu Reeves.
I was going to say, was Keanu Reeves in it?
So he's, I'll explain that
in
a sec.
He's in your mind.
He's standing, he's in your mind. He's like your imaginary friend.
Nice.
He's standing there going, buddy, no one gives a what you look like.
Really?
And I was like, it's true because it's first person.
Yeah, well, there is that. But, did you see like any cutscenes and stuff? Like, because that was the thing. It was like, you're not going to see your character that much because they have this whole kind of commitment to first person. But then it was like, well, yeah, you'll see your character in mirrors, I guess.
No.
Or if you hop on a bike, you'll get to see yourself. But it's like, it is weird for as much, because at least they put that bit of dialogue in. But it's like, at some point, they're putting so much like potential into character creation, but you might not even see them that much.
But I feel like the way that your character looks actually sometimes influences the way that you play. Like you might immediately go like, oh, I'm going to make like Grognak, the Viking space Viking sort of thing. And so you'll like make a guy who's got like physically scarred or like extra muscle density or something like that. Or you might make like a hacker guy who's a bit thinner or like has crazy like augmented eyes and stuff like that.
It's all about playing the way you want
to play. Yeah, exactly. So even if I don't see my character, I know what he looks
like. Yeah, there is that. Like, I just like, I want to see, because I remember when they debuted some of the gameplay stuff and we had like V come out of the elevator and you got to see her like properly. And it's like, I want to see my build. Like, I want to see the character. Because I'm buying all these different jackets and there's all this different loot and whatever. I'd like to see that a bit more.
The only time we saw the character's full body, not even their face, was when we were on a motorcycle and the player stopped to check out the skyline because it was beautiful. Nice. And the camera zoomed out. Now, I'm not sure, it wasn't very clear, or maybe I missed it. I'm not sure if that's something that he chose to do to zoom out, like you can in Skyrim, for example. You can do either. Mm-hmm. Or if that was just a default, if you stop the motorbike, it zooms out.
Right.
The first person-ness of it, I thought was really cool to start until we got on the motorbike and we were driving around. And obviously, I was sitting right at the front of this big screen. And I don't get motion sickness, but I can see people really suffering from that.
Uh-huh.
So the option to switch between it, even just when driving, I really hope that's in there.
Yeah, I would definitely flick to third.
I've also heard that there's a heavily rumoured camera mode that's going to be introduced into it further down. So,
cause like
it's,
Red Dead.
Yeah, because it is like a beautiful game. So I'm hoping that the third person and what you wear will obviously come into effect with that, because you can be like, this is my character standing against like a massive nuclear explosion.
I hope so.
Yeah, that would make sense. Sorry to cut you off. No. Because there are no loading screens. There is no fast travel. So you have to travel everywhere. So like having
it's gonna be a blessing and a curse and something.
You must unlock something like a jumping a helicopter or something.
They'll probably be like
flying cars.
Like a public transport system.
Maybe they have like in the cyberpunk world. There's this crew called the Trauma Team that are like these like governmently separate sort of mercenary faction that come in. Lots of rich people can pay for them to take care of themselves. They're like a mini SWAT team and they arrive in helicopters and stuff.
Yeah.
So there's like potential to maybe like hop in one of their vehicles to get around.
Yeah. Basically, they said for the demo, we are only fast traveling for the purposes of saving time in this demo. Yeah. There is no fast travel. There is no loading screens between areas. That's what they said to us. So mm-hmm. they were probably just addressing the lack of loading screens.
Okay. Because what was your like overall takeaway from it? Because we've talked about Cyberpunk a bunch before. I think you were avoiding trailers and stuff to just wait and see.
Yeah, so I went... like dove deep into it for the purposes of obviously because I really wanted to go and see the presentation. Mm-hmm. I'm so hyped for this game. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm like most gamers these days where I'm just like, right, I'm not putting all of my eggs
in. Wait and see.
Yeah. Just in case. For me, obviously, I spend a lot of time working and streaming and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And this is not a game I'll be able to play during either of those.
Yeah.
So this is going to be my sort of couch do nothing type game. So I don't know like how much I'm going to be able to get into it. So mm-hmm. I think that's why I'm a bit more reserved about it.
I think for me, it's like I having not seen any of the gameplay like in real time or anything, I can't get away from it being a better Deus Ex.
Yeah.
Is the thing that you were saying. Like, it's just so much of it is reminiscent of Deus Ex in terms of the way that it looks to control and like the blade arms and like, I like the idea of the customization thing. So I'm kind of like, I'm waiting for it to like show more. I don't think I've ever really gotten over the fact that it's not third person.
Could you customize your gear in Deus Ex?
Your like mods and augments.
Yeah.
Not your costume though.
You could put loads of skill points into different areas.
Okay. Which, so you could have different ways to play it.
Yeah. Which unfortunately had a bit of a bad effect. They farmed out the boss battles and the first game to a different company, and they weren't told that basically you should be able to approach it from different angles.
Yeah.
So it meant that even if you had like a tech and stealth build, you'd be sometimes chucked into firefights, mm-hmm. which were just out.
They got the balance way better in Mankind Divided, but you were still like re-unlocking the same augments, but it was all about the augments and the powers, and then it was like how that filtered into different levels. And like it was just that standard thing of like, if it's a stealth build, then you go through the ventilation shaft. If it's the other one, you go this way.
Yeah.
And so like, I'm kind of hoping that they get around more of that stuff in Cyberpunk.
I do love a game where there's a lot of ways to do stuff because it really encourages replayability. Yes. Also encourages like sort of watching someone else play it as well.
Mm-hmm. We'll see how the rest of it sort of shows. So I guess it depends how much they'll show for the rest of this year, but it's out in March next year. So
I know it's actually fairly close, and yet we're only still seeing presentation and only seeing things. No one has actually had a hands-on that we know of at the moment.
I quite
so it's like
it being exclusive, but obviously the elephant in the room would be like, is it playable?
Because you always worry about a company controlling the message so much. So after a while, you respect it the first couple of times because you're like, yep, you want to put your best foot forward. But when it comes to this sort of thing, you're like, but why are you not showing any more?
Did you know what console your build was on? Or did they just show
He had an Xbox One controller, but I did not see the console.
I would guess PC, and then like, we're curious if it gets downgraded or whatever, to make it work on regular PS4 and stuff like that. But anyway, Jules, you got to play Dragon Ball Z Kakarot.
I did.
It another Dragon Ball Z game?
Speaking about flying through public transportation systems to flying on a Nimbus on your little cloud.
I do love a Nimbus.
It's a game that I really, really wasn't holding out much hope for. Mm. In fact, when I heard that it was getting announced and I saw the first few trailer things from it, I was like, wow, okay, we're rehashing this story again, and all these arcs again and again and again. And then when they said it was going to be an open world aspect, I was very kind of put off from it because I remember being a little bit burned from playing Jump Force and the One Piece World Seeker stuff, because it seems like Bandai Namco know how to do the fighting aspects pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the Dragon Ball Z stuff, like with Budokai Tenkaichi 3, is one of the best fighting games I've ever played.
Uh-huh.
But when it comes to the open world style stuff, they don't know how to do that yet. They're still finding their feet with it. So mm-hmm. I'm worried that it's just going to be yet another sort of sparsely populated open world with not that much to do in, with great fights, just not.
So they've taken the standards, like the Saiyan Saga, the Namek Saga, whatever, and they've open-worldified those stories.
Yes. So the bit that I got to play two battles. I got to play as Goku versus Raditz with the help of Gohan and Piccolo. And then I also got to play as Gohan versus Perfect Cell.
Nice.
And in between, I got to travel on the Nimbus, just like flying around just to have a look at the open world and mm-hmm. accept the quest that led me into it. Mm-hmm. But the problem was is that while it looked great, like the animations, I almost think that they might have used the same graphical engine as they use for FighterZ.
I would love
because
that.
Because the graphics looked phenomenal. Uh-huh. But the world looked very flat, as in here is a solid one tone green grass.
That,
and I was a bit like, okay. But then when I actually started fighting,
does it change when you land, or is it always like that?
It's kind of always a little bit like that. Okay. But when the fighting actually kicked off, especially as against Raditz, I was like, this is really good.
Okay.
The fighting system is very fun. I'm glad that they're not doing, as far as I can tell, I haven't seen anything about the two player or multiplayer thing.
Right.
In fact, I would actually almost hope that they don't put anything like that in there, because I feel like the countering system you've got of being able to just counter behind any move that comes your way,
mm-hmm.
and then fire off all your special powers and stuff, it felt like I was having to pause the battle to charge up, to fly back in again. I was able to dodge attacks by like circling around them and flying close and dodging back out again. It actually was really fun. And when I was playing against Perfect Cell, which is a huge step up in difficulty compared to the Raditz one, that was a real challenge. Like, I got down to my final bit of health and I was barely scraping by because his attacks were going through, staggering me if I blocked. Right. And if I tried to dodge, he could teleport in front of me and just bash me back into the fight arena. It was actually really fun.
That sounds cool. Rich, you a Dragon Ball Z fan?
I used to watch the anime when I was younger.
Hell yeah, you did.
I haven't played any of the games, though, actually. There was one, I think it was Xenoverse 2, that I was tempted
That's
by because there was character creation. No, I haven't. No,
you should get Fighter Z if you're like a fan of the old school anime.
I'm not a fighting game fan, to be honest. I'm really bad at it, and then I just throw my controller.
I honestly think that this would be a good place to maybe jump in then, because it's got the RPG elements that come into it, where you can actually level up your character and go and grind and do all these bits and bobs to like get better stats so that you'll make your fights a lot easier. But it does follow all of the story arcs that we know and love.
I was going to say, so what do you like? You can go do a bunch of side missions and you just, when you go to the next story mission, that's just the continuation of the actual story from the show.
Yes.
And just like they kind of canonize it by being like, well, he was off doing this. Well,
it would basically be like, from what I saw, it would be like, say you defeated the Raditz when afterwards it would just be like, oh look, there's some other quests to do until something else kicks off. But it wouldn't just be like, say your son's just being captured. It wouldn't just be like, hey, do you fancy helping me collect some pigs for a bit? It would just be like, you've got to go and like sort this out because this is the pressing priority mission.
Because this many Dragon Ball Z games in, like you said, they've rehashed. I mean, they've only got so much material to draw from unless you start delving into the super stuff. So it's like, at this point, it's how, what do you even do at this point?
I'm not entirely sure. And I think that this is maybe... weirdly, it's a game for purists who collect every single Dragon Ball Z game, and it's a game for beginners, but it's not for people who have already, they're like middling fans, because I can't really see what it is adding new apart from a very decent fighting system. But bear in mind, I've only been able to play those two matches, so my first impressions of it aren't based on the longevity. They're based on this works really well, but will I get bored of it? I can't answer that
question. Because I remember when we first played Jump Force this time last year.
I enjoyed the fighting thing from that because I was like, oh, it looks really nice, does this. But then as soon as I played the game and realized how dense and how much they were asking us to do those very simplistic fights, I was like, actually, it's a bit boring.
I think in terms of obviously they've called it Kakarot, it seems like it's just about Goku, and then like they've got some cool ideas. Like I said, if you were them and it's like we've got the same like handful of shows or whatever chapters, then what else can you do?
The question is, how do you do much with the Dragon Ball Z license that isn't a fighting game? Like, because in my opinion, Fighter Z or Fighters was the best thing that they've done in such a long time. It was a phenomenal fighting game. It still allowed you, it told a unique story, which is great, and it also allowed you to go back in time and do
another. It looked just like the show.
Yeah,
as well.
To me, that's what they should be doing. So,
it's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Kakarot is kind of a bit like, okay, whoa.
I don't know
okay.
what you could do. Actually, like a mini game collection? I did some gravity training or something?
No idea.
I don't know. But yeah. The Kakarot seems cool. Rach, you played Pokemon Sword and Shield.
I did. Well, I think it was Shield that I played.
Okay.
Technically. So the demo for Pokemon was very simple. It was the water gym. The gym leader was Nessa, who we've seen in Chile. She's got the blue hair. Uh-huh. It showed off the fact that it's pretty much just Pokemon.
Okay.
Right. But that's the best compliment you've probably given.
Yeah, but with new creatures.
Did you Dynamax anything?
I did. I had a heckin' Dynamax Grookey. You know, the wee monkey one?
Yeah.
The grass star.
What's your thoughts on the general sort of presentation? The fact that, because the Dynamax thing, if someone hasn't seen the trailer, is that now Pokemon are like the size of skyscrapers.
Yeah.
And they fight like kaijus.
Well, you were telling me there's two versions. There's Dynamaxing and Gigamaxing.
Yeah, so Gigantamaxing.
Oh,
Gigantamaxing. So basically, a lot of Pokemon can Dynamax, and it's probably like it's basically this series version of the mega stones, the Z moves that have been in previous games. So the gymmick this time is Dynamaxing. Gym battles are on like a gigantic scale. Like I feel like gym battles got pushed to the side with Sun and Moon. Well, they literally did. They were removed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like they're making up for that with this one,
but
and saying like
point.
They're back and they're pretty awesome.
Because it seems to be like it's kind of dividing the fans a little bit in terms of, because I saw like the creators did this really cool thing with Game Informer where they answered a bunch of questions and they said that the Dynamax and Gigamax and stuff is more of a projection. It's like what the audience sees. It's not that the Pokemon themselves have gotten that big, which I thought was them doing damage control. Because I know that like Adam Cleary like hates that they've got all big, whereas I think it looks really cool.
My first reaction was, what the bots is this? So lame, it's so silly looking. But then if you remember, like look at for example what they've done with Galarian Farms as well, because they did that with Alolan Farms and I thought they were, do you remember Alolan Executor?
Yeah, everyone laughed at it, and now it's just like, oh, he's in.
I like the Galarian, is it the Galarian Weezing
with the top hat and the chimney.
Oh yeah.
So basically Pokemon has always been like this. Look way back to Gen 1, we had a Pokemon that looks like a Pokeball.
So
it's always been daft. And
a seal called Seal?
There was a seal called Seal. Yeah. Yes.
We were fine.
I'm really impressed with how they just keep like innovating with it, but with still keeping it like, you know, Pokemon.
So did they focus on the combat side of it, or did they let you run around a little bit?
It was very much just battles. Uh-huh. So yeah, like I only played just the gym battles. So we loaded up, there was a little gym puzzle, you push some buttons, opens up some waterfalls so you can pass. You have to hit the blue one to open up the red one, you know, that sort of puzzle kind of style. Uh-huh. And then we go through into the main arena, which was Nessa with her giant Croconaw. What was it called?
Crocodile?
It's like the new turtle one.
Okay.
The snapping turtle.
Turtle John.
Dreadnought.
Okay.
Yes, of course. But in terms of graphics and stuff, because obviously it's the first one on Switch, first like home console Pokemon like this in ever?
Yeah.
A long time.
Yeah.
Did it look like it justified the new hardware? Like any special effects or anything?
Yes. So basically, did you play Pokemon Let's Go?
Oh yeah.
I played it briefly.
So the graphics in that were obviously lovely, but So it's like Pokemon Let's Go, but then it's got a few things that Sun and Moon did, but then the characters actually look like real humans and not just like plastic mannequins.
Okay, good. That's cool. Good. Yeah. A lot of the Dynamax attacks like result in like big mushroom clouds and explosions and stuff like that.
Oh, there's loads of particle effects. Actually, yeah. So after you Dynamax, it changes all your moves. All your moves become like...
super special versions.
Super special versions. Cool. Super special versions. Uh-huh. And the particle effects and the effects on those were... Oh, so cool.
Sounds cool. I guess if you just, because they're kind of walking a line between like traditional turn-based Pokemon, it's not going to be the like throwing forever balls like in Let's Go or Pokemon Go. And so I guess with this, it's like it is traditional turn-based battling and then they're just adding
Dynamaxing. Especially with in the overworld as well. This was not something I got to play in the demo, but obviously we've seen it in trailers and that. The overworld is going to look like Pokemon Let's Go, so you're going to see Pokemon roaming. Okay. And of course, you're going to have Pokemon raids. So this is where like, the Switch comes in, where it's like it's going to take a lot of processing power, obviously, to have everyone all in the same instance fighting the same Pokemon. Raids are really, really something I was really hoping to see.
Yeah. I love the idea of it because it seems that they're like picking and choosing some of the best stuff from Go. So it's like, let's just have like this massive Pokemon that we can't, like, one person can't defeat, but if we all sat around together.
Yeah.
And like, you could store that up in your story save or whatever, and then we'll fight it at lunchtime.
It feels like that's the way that they've been trying to introduce. As soon as they came up with that, they're like, oh, right, yeah, this makes perfect sense. Why not implement this in every single Pokemon title going forward?
It's fantastic.
Rachel, you're someone who did about 3,000 throws to get a lovely shiny. Are you going to miss the hands on throwing technique?
10,000. And it was trades, not throws.
Yes.
Am I going to miss what from Let's Go? The throwing the...
Yeah, because I think they've ditched that.
I think that belongs in Pokemon Go and Pokemon Let's Go. Yeah. It's time to just go back to pressing A.
Reliably, like, having Pokeballs that actually reliably work. Both you guys played Nioh 2.
Yes.
Does it, how does it control and how does it feel and everything? Because I feel like I used to adore that game and I still think it's one of the best Souls-like games. But I'm wondering what they do in the Shadow of Sekiro.
Well, the thing is that I really enjoyed my time with the original Nioh, but I did feel like it was possibly too floaty and a bit too arcadey for me to feel like it was, it felt like Dark Souls light in every sense of the word because it literally felt light on the ground. But Nioh 2 feels a bit more weighty. You've still got your different stances with weapons. You've still got the ability to upgrade your character with every sort of like bit of items and all the colors of like
gear pickups
like,
and rarities.
Legendary gears and like all of that stuff, which is fantastic because that's what made it stand out from being just a Souls clone. But it's doubled down on the Japanese mythology. It's like got all of these like the location looked amazing. It was like a rainy shrine that we were at.
It was very similar to kind of locations we had in Nioh 1, but much more sort of dense.
Yeah, that's how I would describe it. Yeah, it felt like it was more lived in, didn't it?
Yes.
Because the first game kind of felt like these were levels and you were going through them. Whereas this one here, it felt like it was a place situated in time, a very tangible thing. Mm-hmm. The enemies, we only got to like experience maybe a handful of them because the demo was unfortunately quite short.
Right.
But the enemy that really stood out was this tiny little like baby that had big, bulging red eyes.
Like a Murloc.
Didn't like that at all. Didn't like it.
Was it easy to kill or do you have to go well?
To be honest, I was actually quite surprised because you walk up to it and think it looks quite frail and you just slash it a few times.
They had poison, I'm sure.
Yeah, but they've got like, they could do a bit of fight back. I mean, all of the enemies definitely felt like they were a step up in terms of difficulty as well. You weren't just sort of like, oh, there's a zombie man, two slashes and you're down.
Right.
Yeah. This one would definitely made you feel like you're constantly on the back foot or basically told you to switch up your weapons to match what enemy that you are facing.
Uh-huh.
And there were a ton of different weapons as well.
I was going to say,
spears?
Yeah.
You got dual hand axes.
Was there two-handed axes in the first game? I
don't remember them.
Like an executioner axe, like two-handed.
Oh, like a massive thing. Yeah,
but then they had two hatchet axes as well that you could walk along and turn hack. And you got to the boss, didn't you, which was a double-headed horse with horrible teeth.
Do you know
teeth?
In the Bloodborne DLC, you know Ludwig, the horse demon from Bloodborne? It was basically that, but with big old oni horns, and it comes at me. I do two dodges, and I'm about to go in for the kill, and the demo ends.
Oh,
it was gutting.
Still technically class that as a win. It's not a loss.
Yeah, I didn't die.
That's maybe a thing.
There was some other bits as well. The new features, for example, that now you can summon on a sort of demonic power, or if you hold down the right trigger, he would develop the own Oni horns himself and then actually be able to unleash that. I know that it was a kind
pretty
of similar.
Sure that's new. Like, but there was like combos before and stuff you could level up, like set bonuses with gear.
But now you can actually like, in the middle of your regular attacks, if you then hold down the right trigger and carry on attacking, it will upgrade the moveset that you do. So it does add a sort of like
it's
more
a bit that. When
Ninja Gaiden was yeah. what I thought of when I was yeah. playing uh-huh. it.
Big emphasis on like combos and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Do they have all the like the same with the, you have your three weapon stances, like low, medium,
yes,
and high?
Yes, they do, yeah.
In terms of the controls, is it on the face buttons as well?
Hold yeah. down the left button, left bumper, and then you can press right. square, circle, or whatever, and then it will just switch it between them. It was fine, but the problem was about the first game, and it's something that I don't think that they have addressed, is it was very complicated.
Right.
I found that like the item management and having to know, like you pick up so much stuff that you're constantly just having to go through like, okay, does this fit my character build? What does this do? Why is this stat saying that's increased but it's dropping down?
Right,
I
right.
noticed like, they are, I'm not sure if it did it in the first one because it was a while ago. I'll need to go back to it. But I noticed it is all sorted slightly better this time. I did notice that.
Mm-hmm.
But as for, what was it you were asking about? The attack being square and triangle. I think that was what I couldn't get over.
That's honestly right. When the first time I
prefer just being R1 and just having like hold it down for a heavy attack. And
it's almost like a staple of the genre at this point.
It makes sense though, obviously, because the longbow combat, like that was something I didn't actually play with.
I shot one guy once with it and just was like, whoop.
I remember getting the longbow in Neo 1 and just thinking it was fantastic.
Right.
So that's what you use R1 for, obviously, is switching between your longbow and your...
But we're dancing around the really important points here.
Cool.
Because there are two things that have come back. Well, one is brand new. One that's come back that's brilliant. The Shrine Guardians. They're the little guys, the little like, leaf hats that look like they've just been ripped out of Studio Ghibli.
Yes.
They are back.
Good.
Do not worry.
Lovely.
Like, you can amend all your fears on that. But they have a new friend, which is what we'll just call him, Roly Poly Bastard.
There was a Roly Poly cat.
Yeah, he's a literal like...
RPB.
Now, this is the thing. I follow an Instagram account, which is of these two cats called... I think they're called Pachaco and Boko. They're brilliant. They're basically like a certain breed of cat that have got like the big bulgy eyes and the tongue sticks out, kind of like little bubs.
That's
sort of
a chameleon, but go on.
Definitely a cat. But basically, this cat creature looks exactly like that. Massive big eyes. And you go up to it and it just says pet.
Right.
And I know that there's going to be the meme of you can pet the cat in Neo too.
Good.
But once you pet it, it follows you around by literally rolling after you. And I'm not sure if you're meant to take
like
it
Sonic.
Back, if you're meant to take it back to the shrine.
Can it
or
die?
Well, when I died, it wasn't there.
Oh.
So it's like a one shot. Maybe it's like a bonus or something like that.
Demons would have finished the cat off as well.
Don't say that.
Well, I'm assuming.
Don't, come
are they
going
to leave it?
God, this is like Divinity Original.
It's not going to go back home.
But yeah, so yeah, you can get a sort of part-time pet. It's a bit weird.
Shenmue style. I like the idea of it. Do you think, as a general sort of takeaway, Neo 1's reputation was like as an incredibly hard game. It was very precise.
Mm-hmm.
Same feeling for the second one?
I'd say it's It's,
okay.
It's the... My
that
one
mini boss that you were fighting.
Yeah, he actually took quite a pasting, didn't he? But the only problem that I can think of is that does Neo 2 do enough to say that it's a worthy sequel and not just an extended piece of DLC, effectively?
Well, it's a completely different story. Obviously, William is not in this one. It's a new boy. So I guess it doesn't have to like build upon the gameplay.
It's weird
a new
because,
story,
like,
The
first one was in development for, like, I didn't realize that game was in development for about 10 years in terms of when it was originally conceptualized and it went between different teams and eventually came out. Excuse me. And like you said, that Neo 2, the levels feel more lived in and things like that. So I wonder if it, like, might just be a sequel of refinement at this point.
The thing is that, like, I feel like I've been spoiled a little bit by Sekiro. Like,
right.
I honestly love that game so much. Yeah. And the fact that you've got, like, the grapple hook and the verticality and stuff like that, I don't see any of that in this.
And it's and so
this,
weighty and meaningful.
Yeah, and this feels like it's like, they're borrowing tips from Dark Souls 2 and 3.
Right.
Whereas Sekiro struck out on its own to be like, I'm not going to be like my brothers, so I'm going to have their sort of like elements of it. And if anything, I would have hoped that Neo would have been taking cliff notes from that game because I would have loved to see much more jumping and acrobats and stuff like
more
that.
More Eastern environments in games.
I love Japanese
mythology. So you guys had a couple of indies that you wanted to highlight. One of them was called Dark Room.
Well, Dark Room isn't an indie game.
It's a live action video game.
So run by a lovely gentleman called John Robertson.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Tell us about Dark Room, and then we've got another one that Jules is freaking out
I
about.
I am about. It was great, the Dark Room, wasn't it? It was. I knew very little when we were going in there, apart from the fact that it was just an experience that it was best left unspoiled. And it was a case of, all I can say is that you wake up in a dark, dark room, and you have to make choices that are basically one of four choices as
a
group.
So it is a game.
It is a game.
So it's an experience. I got to admit, I was skeptical as well,
okay.
but it was so much fun. So it's a a show. Mm-hmm. Think of it as a comedy show.
Okay.
Meets atmosphere of the board game.
It's fantastic.
Okay.
And as if it was written by one of the very fastidious arses who wrote, and as John himself said, the grammatical Nazis that are basically the people who made the Zork games.
Like,
if
right,
you,
okay,
yeah, cool. Like if you didn't type it in precisely, you would get nowhere. So that's what he basically was inspired by to make this.
Okay.
So he carries the show, approaches an audience member. You awake to find yourself in a dark room. What do you do? Four options on the screen. Go north, find the light switch, sleep. Was the other one.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically you'd say like, oh, find the light switch. And he goes, how would you find the light switch?
Right.
You're in a dark room. Yeah, you don't know where to go. So stuff like that, like really silly, like Jill said, like Zork, like I was looking at Space Quest recently.
Literal stuff.
Colossal Cave Adventure.
Yes.
That sort of stuff. So it was like that, but with this really charismatic, really funny host. Mm-hmm, and it's almost like, I know that they made it into a video game. It's on Steam Early Access. But I feel like the whole thing with it was, the whole appeal was that he was there.
Right.
He was reacting to everything. Audience were trying to take the piss and he was just not having it. He was in control the whole way.
Because if you got the Steam version, you wouldn't have any of the narration, I guess.
I don't know. I haven't actually checked it out yet, but I will do based on this.
He's in it as a character, but you wouldn't have that sort of snappy, like, for example, walking past Jules Gill of What Culture fame and putting a torch in his face and going, oh, I know who you are.
And I was like, in my mind, I was like,
shrinking.
Oh. I was like, oh, damn. And all of our lives went, and he just went, all right, okay, well, we're going to do one more. And I was like, oh, don't. And he like came back out and he's like, hello, come up. And I was like, oh, all right, okay. Oh. So I didn't get very far.
Okay.
It was good.
That really sounds cool. The other one that you had down that you were freaking out about was Moving Out, which is another Overcooked style thing.
Moving Out was great.
Yeah.
Team 17 have knocked it out of the park.
Team 17 are the best veteran devs in the industry.
Everyone always just goes on about like, oh, Overcooked's great, Team 17 are amazing. Worms. Bloody Worms.
Oh, I just assumed Worms more than Overcooked.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying.
Overcooked.
Yeah. Overcooked is amazing. They had a new DLC out for that, which was called Carnival of Chaos. And the Moving Out game is fantastic. It's very, very simple. It's for 1 to 4 players. You literally have items in a house, air quotes house, because it does changes to offices and haunted buildings and farms that you've got to get out in as quick a time as possible. And some of them you can pick up yourself, some of them you need 2 or 3 players to carry.
Right.
And obviously as soon as another person takes the other end of the thing,
the physics change.
Moving together,
right.
Which means that if, say, I wanted to get through a door, but Rach was at a certain angle or trying to get through a different way, the whole thing would like pivot.
I watched them try and get this massive sofa out of a door for ages.
Like, honestly, it's so hard.
Perfectly big windows.
I know.
Break the window.
You have freedom to break windows.
Yeah.
And do
so the,
like
so the funny thing was is that we started out when Ash and I were playing it, of just being like, right, let's just carefully take this out. Like, just take your time, go through there. And then by the end of our playthrough, well, we were at this haunted house level, which included a piano that tried to chomp on you, like the Mario 64 thing, a ghost that would instantly send you back to the truck, and like chairs that actually ran away from you that you needed to pick up and throw there. By the end of it, we were like picking up boxes and lobbing them out of the window,
right.
And even like jumping as you did it to try and get extra arcs. It would go and land in the truck itself.
I feel like there's way more to this than there is to Overcooked, because I remember when I play Overcooked with my wife, I throw stuff anywhere. I did in the first game. I know you can in the second one, but if you run and just let go of the grab button, you can make shift a throw in the first
exactly,
game.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was like getting used to that.
It does look very similar to Overcooked in the way that like you will be screaming at your friend, trying to coordinate, trying to work together, but you'll just know it'll all go pear-shaped.
I wonder if the whole game is like inspired by that pivot scene in Friends.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
Ross trying to get the couch the stairs.
Honestly, like if I had a night of just playing Overcooked to the DLC and then followed by Moving Out, I'd be a happy man, because because I didn't find the Moving Out thing as stressful as Overcooked.
I would stress out so much on those games.
No, but Overcooked has that immediate time pressure of these orders are here and you'll burn stuff if you don't do it, whereas Moving Out seemed to be much more of a casual experience where it's just kind of like, hey, look, if you get a gold medal, if you get it all out quickly, but you won't die or have like people going boo if you don't do it. It's just kind of like, hey, just have some fun, throw some stuff about.
Is the point system based on how much environmental damage you do?
No, it's based on how quick you get them into the truck, and I think that there were some other bonuses as well.
Points
that you could get.
The size of the furniture.
Yeah, okay. Something like that. Yeah,
is that out next year?
That is out next year. Yes.
Cool. I love the idea of that. I think I'll because the thing that stressed me out about Overcooked was all the timing elements and the fact that nothing was ready properly. And it reminded me of working retail.
The only one thing that annoyed me about Moving Out was when I was told that the release date was so far away, I was kind of like, it's ready. Like, you've got 5 levels that are here that have got immediate replay. Like, get them out. Get them out of the door.
Yeah. I guess
then I know that I know the DLC for Overcooked's out and they don't want to be overshadowed. That's my thing. And Blasphemous has just come out as well, which they did.
Very true. Team 17, though, absolutely slaying. Like you said, they used to do Worms, now they're sort of known for Overcooked in these little top-down party games.
Putting it out there, they are the UK version of Devolver.
Oh, they might be.
Because they always have quality hit games.
I love Devolver as well. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, so that's our general sort of selection of EGX-type stuff. Check the main What Culture Gaming channel for a whole bunch of videos, specific videos on specific games as well. But yes, for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Rachel Howie.
Thanks for having me.
I'll catch you next time.
Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.